Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you heard in the intro, I just got a new email because I'm not great at my new computer yet and haven't figured out how to turn on and off the right sound effects. But we'll try some new ones this this Tuesday afternoon. This is episode number 24. And if you were listening last week, you heard that my affable co-host Matt was departing for a while, and I'm happy to announce that that has lasted exactly 7 days. Matt, welcome back to Sharp and Hot, my friend.
Thanks. It was all a ploy to get a better contract out of you, and I'm happy to announce that I am now have an extended contract. Thank you.
You know, I want to make a sports joke because I'm pretty sure there's at least one person. I can say, oh, you're doing the...
Blah.
Like this, like people, like comedy people say, I want the Louis C.K. deal, which is let me write whatever show I want and you give me all the money I ask for. But I don't know any sport. So
it's an NFL thing.
It's an NFL thing.
Anyway,
it's a specific sport.
No, it's most often an NFL thing.
I'm really glad you're back.
Thanks. It's important answers like these that can only be answered by me.
Agreed. So let's see. We talked last week about health insurance, we got a call during the show from a listener named Jen. And I wanted to share what I love is when we touch a nerve and people call immediately. They don't write down the phone number for later. They don't look at the magnet they've asked me to mail them on their fridge. They call immediately because we've touched a nerve, and I would like to play for the listeners what Jen had to say because this is something that we didn't talk about but is absolutely relevant and true. Nope, that... I don't know where that came from.
You fail at computer.
I failed. Wait, hold on. This is... Oh, it's The Price is Right. If you don't hit stop on your sound drops, it continues to play into the beginning of the show. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Emily, my name is Jen. I'm calling from Brooklyn. I was calling regarding the mental health healthcare for especially cooks who work in restaurants. And the one thing that I want to say is because we generally have such poor wages where we're making so little money as cooks in the restaurant, a lot of us may actually fall in the poverty line, like federally mandated, which through Obamacare, you can get some really good deals on healthcare now, and the federal government will subsidize your monthly healthcare expense, and you can get a decent plan, including mental health benefits, where you can go and start getting help for any problems that you may have. People should check it out. I think this is great, actually, for our industry. But all the same, I still think we should probably be making a lot more money. there's a lot of value in what we do, and I don't think that it's accurately represented in our wages. But healthcare might be affordable now. So that's all I wanted to add. Thanks so much. Bye.
I wasn't laughing at you, Jen. I was laughing with you because you said we should be making a lot more money. Everybody says that.
Agreed.
And it's totally true.
Agreed. But if you made more money, then you wouldn't qualify for the subsidies. So if this is something that interests you and you're interested in reading about, and I find it interesting.
I think it's great.
The Kaiser Family Foundation, which is kff.org, you can put in your... There's a calculator that they have, and you can put in what your income is, and you have to know what that is. And so if you have a regular paycheck that comes every 2 weeks and tends to be the same, it's a lot easier than if you've cobbled together a freelance life because it asks you to project what you think you're going to make, and then that's my situation.
Right.
So if you lowball then you end up paying more on April 15th. If you overshoot, let's say you think you're going to make $5,000, but you are feeling very promising about next year, and you say, I'm going to make $10,000 next year, and you only make $5,000, you get the money back. So there's no loss if you don't do your assumptions correctly.
Are you talking about general taxes or talking about
health? No, just the health care.
Okay.
Just the health care. So what Jen was talking about is that there is subsidies available if you fall within 138%
right, right.
of the poverty line. The website at healthcare.gov will immediately send you off to Medicaid. If you don't immediately get sent off to Medicaid, you have to put in your income values. And if you're over or under, it's an IRS thing. And when
right.
somebody told me that, then like all the light bulbs went on. Like, oh, that's why this is so complicated.
Right.
It's a tax thing. But the Kaiser Family Foundation is also fascinating. Like, they have really beautiful infographics to explain, like, who are the Young Invincibles and where, and they're like grayed out on certain states.
I've read that comic book,
The Young Invincibles. The ones who never get hurt. Okay, so
I mean,
I'm hoping that the Young Invincibles actually enroll because they are going to subsidize us old people as we get older.
Speak for yourself.
Spring chicken.
Right.
Speaking of chickens, there were several articles that you sent me this week that you want to talk about.
Yeah, so my new thing is I read the newspaper and send Emily every article that I feel is relevant to the show. And there were so many articles in the Times. Well, reading the Times on an application, you can't really tell when it's from. Well, you can from the date at the top of the article, but it's not like an edition anymore. It's just sort of the remnants stay around. But when I was reading on Sunday, which is my newspaper reading day, as opposed to reading The Young Invincibles, which is every other day, there were just so many articles that are relevant to conversation. There was an article about how the drought in California is based, well, a certain amount of it, a lot of it is based on the amount of water used for the crop production, and the greatest amount of water goes into production of alfalfa, which is most often sent to China to feed cattle. Now, not disparaging cattle or Chinese cattle or alfalfa or anything like that. It was just super, super interesting the effects these things have. Additionally, there was an article about antibiotics and chemicals being added into meat production for to allow for greater growth and hormone control and all that stuff, and how that's affected production in the animals, and therefore they're sort of trying to draw connections to further connections to problems in humans in going forward. I mean, we're going to put them all up on the website, but there was tons and tons of articles. And importantly, Chef in Brooklyn brought the heat against the DOH.
Oh, yeah. That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, there were some Co-Jones in there, some Cajones.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait. Here we had to have
I didn't curse.
No, I know, but just in case I have it.
Yeah. But
there we go.
That's some balls. I'm not going to talk anything else about it, but we'll put it up on the website.
Well, when we were talking last week about the, or 2 weeks ago about the gloves, and then we were like, maybe we should just let's pull back the curtain. Let's talk about the DOH. I was like, I don't think I want to do that because I don't want to invite any more scrutiny into my life than I've already had. Like, they've come to my place of business and I have been on the hot seat, and it's terrifying. And so now here's a person in Brooklyn who is, let's see, do you think I can tweet this article while I talk at the same time?
Looking at you, judging on the track record today, probably not.
Okay.
Anyway, so the point is that homeboy like threw at the head of the DOH in online, and it was pretty ballsy. There was an article also in the Post by a critic, and it doesn't take that much balls for a critic to critique the DOH. I just thought it was really impressive that somebody kind of brought it against the DOH.
Right, because people like me live in fear of that, of the, like, oh my God, the health inspector's here! And, like, go into, like, DEFCON 1. Which, by the way, is it DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 5?
DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1. See, I thought it was I thought DEFCON 1 was the lowest DEFCON.
No, that's the highest DEFCON.
All right.
I know my DEFCON.
All right, wait. I'm copying the link. Look, I'm almost technologically
Nobody
savvy.
Wants to hear you explain how to tweet on
Look,
the
you know what makes excellent radio is talking about how I can't use my computer. I think that that's pretty. I'm not logged into Twitter. I'm totally not prepared to do this. But the other article was about the hens.
The hens.
Oh, Twitter's down. That is radio gold.
Right. There was a lot of hay made this week about new policies in California about the size of cages that egg-laying hens have to be in. They increased the size, almost doubling it, so giving greater size for each egg-laying hen so they can spread their wings and turn around. And, you know, again, Emily and I have talked about how these things make us feel icky sometimes, and it's not a pretty picture. Apparently, the benefits are incredible. You get better egg production, but of course, it's more costly to the producers because they get less chickens in the same amount of space.
Right. They have to give each bird more real estate, which divides their egg per square foot production.
The controversial issue is that there is a law that any eggs coming into California have to abide by these rules, and states are balking at that because they don't feel it's fair because they don't have that law. But you know what? Good for California. Go ahead, California.
Good for California. And on top of that, when we had our son, we learned that the inflammable material in mattresses...
Did you try to light your kid on fire?
No, you're not able to, because the California law requires all mattresses for children's beds to meet a certain fire safe standard.
Uh-huh.
And all of the rest of the country said, yeah, good idea. So now, because California has the most stringent law, everybody, all other manufacturers of mattresses abide by that law.
Mm-hmm.
That's not mentioned in this article, which I thought was interesting because it's a precedent for that. They mentioned that California has the, or that any state can pass a law that's for the greater common good. And if they just get there first, the other 49 of us can look around and be like, oh yeah, good idea. Okay, let's all do that. Like crosswalks or child, you know, fireproof mattresses.
Right.
And so this egg production thing just says a lot more, I think, about the poultry lobby.
Or same-sex marriage, or legalization of marijuana, and other good things like that.
I hear New Jersey's next on the list for legalization of marijuana.
I believe it when I see it. I'm sure there's tons of precedent for that, but I think it's a great thing. We'll put up all these articles on the site. There's a journal of record called the New York Times. Read it, people. It's very good.
Somebody just messaged me that Twitter is in fact down. Shout out to Annika. Twitter is in fact down. So the New York Times is a reputable institution,
yeah.
And they're a good place to find your source material.
I think you're banned from computer.
I think I should be banned from. I'm going to close it. Oh, but then I don't have my coin. We don't have our coin jar.
We're going to curse anyway.
No, it's true. We stopped doing that. So my chickens, I have 19 chickens in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
And as someone who grows them or raises them just for enough for our own family at this time of year, they don't have any artificial light, and chickens are born with just the number of eggs they're going to lay in their lifetime. You can't add more eggs into a chicken.
Right.
So if you give them artificial light, you shorten their lifespan. And then on top of that, when you watch my chickens out the window, it's really heartwarming to see them like walk around and scratch in the dirt and look for stuff to eat this time of year because the snow is starting to melt. And that's such an upheaval in the
system. Did you or did you not give them artificial light?
I've not given them artificial light. I haven't had to be fair. I wasn't expecting them to start laying until now, but they've been laying all winter long.
Right.
And we're up to more than a dozen eggs a day.
Right.
Which is more than we can eat, but I have my black market egg sales.
Back to the
health inspector. Should a health inspector arrive at someone who's selling eggs out of their backyard as a little cottage industry to help pay for the chicken feed, you need to have a commercially certified kitchen and a walk-in refrigerator that maintains a serve-safe temperature of 45 degrees for eggs or lower to sell dozens of eggs, you know, a dozen eggs to my friends. So I sell them to my friends on the black market instead.
Are all your eggs named? I know.
Eggs?
Oh, no, not the eggs. The chickens.
Goodbye, Jeffrey.
For breakfast this morning, I had Jeffrey and Maria.
No, my chickens. No, so we had a smaller flock, and we named them, and they became pets, which became problematic when they stopped laying, because now we are just feeding two not very friendly pets. Like, they're not cuddly, and they're not particularly friendly. And so
Did you slaughter them and eat them yourselves?
No, they had names. They were pets. So they took one of them was a little bit more adventurous than the other, and she convinced the Arakana, who lays blue eggs, convinced the Rhode Island Red, who was like my dutiful good girl, to take up sleeping in the neighbor's rhododendron. And the Arakana had been doing it for a couple of months, and she was fine because she was much closer to a wild animal than the Rhode Island Red. Once the two of them took up together, it was about 3 nights, and we never saw them again. And my neighbor was devastated because he loved them, and they were out in his yard every morning. And Mark and I were like, well, now we just don't have to pay for birds' feed that aren't laying anymore.
Right.
This time around, we have 19 of them, and so they don't have names. The rooster's named Fancy Pants, right. But he's on extra notice. The second he becomes unfriendly, it's into the stew pot. I will have no tolerance for a mean rooster.
So what's your plan for slaughtering them yourself?
We are going to buy a galvanized kill cone and nail it to the side of the barn.
Nice.
You want to come over? It's going to be a party.
I mean, I've done it before.
So. Yeah, it's cool. And no, it's super cool. And it's one of those things that I think people who enjoy eating meat.
Killing things.
I don't enjoy killing them, but I think that it's something that if you enjoy eating meat, getting to do it or having to do it once. Like, I wish that there was a class in high school where you had to wait tables for a semester. Like you take economics. You take economics for a semester, they figure you know enough to go be set free in the world. You should have to work waiting tables to learn humility and service and how not to be a jerk to customers.
Yeah, but that would assume that normal people give a crap about the service industry, which they don't.
Everyone eats in restaurants.
Yeah, but they divorce themselves from the service angle of it. That's why the kitchen is a miraculous place that doesn't exist. You know.
That's my point. You should have to take a semester in high school to break you of that ability to be like, no, you're here to serve me.
But the people who are making the what was it called? The curricula are not people who give a crap about that. Notice I said crap.
I was on there on the button.
So why would they do that? You know, though chefs are rock stars and everybody loves food, people still don't give a crap about people who work in the service industry. You know what I mean?
That is exactly my point. If you're going to eat chicken or you're going to eat mammals or you're going to go out to eat in restaurants, you should be forced to peek behind the curtain once.
Yeah. Okay. You could say that about everything though. I mean,
well, and that's what makes a well-rounded individual.
Sure.
I don't want to get bossed around. You know, if I'm serving people at the Cheesecake Factory, I don't want someone to boss me around because it's their one opportunity to be in charge of somebody.
Right.
All right, we have to take a break.
Cool.
We have a question. We have a food question from a listener after the break. And yeah, we'll take it there.
Today's music is Leaving by Dead Stars on heritageradionetwork.org.
Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel-on-steel, textiles, and forge-hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson. In the studio with me is Matt Wang.
Hi.
Hi, Matt. Matt just said that his Le Creuset is all jacked up because there's brown stuff on the bottom and the inside.
Yeah.
So when I did an event at the Le Creuset store, and what the nice lady behind the counter told me to do is fill it with warm water and put a cap full of bleach in and let it sit for like a half an hour, and then it'll wash out. But that Le Creuset as a brand actually encourages people to like own and love that brown.
And
that's part of the experience.
I think I passed out for a couple minutes in the break because prior to going on air, you people at home missed me setting a new land speed record for eating a Roberta's pizza, which was delicious, the Rosso with all the vegetables.
Which the server said, that's a lot of vegetables.
It wasn't that many vegetables. It was delicious. Anyway, so I'm a little punchy from all the glutens. I'm like full of gluten, which is like so funny, the gluten thing. So now we're all acutely aware of glutens.
So Matt sent a tweet out this weekend that I reacted to as though it was a serious tweet. He asked a food question, which was, is oat bran the new gluten?
No, it was, is oat bran gluten-free?
Right.
Is oat bran the new gluten is two on the nose.
And that's why I didn't get that it was a joke, because I need things to be spelled out for me.
Right.
But I gave him a thoughtful and considered response, which is that unless it's certified gluten-free, it may be cross-contaminated because factories who process gluten-based wheat, turn it into flour, turn it into cookies, can share machinery with things, you know, the same machine will make oat bran or make rolled oats. So you have to pay. Particularly, I made the mistake of buying gluten-free oats, not realizing that it was going to be $7 for a pound of certified gluten-free oats because they need their own sequestered area to be rolled in. And the joke that you made was that, what was that, 20 years ago?
Something like that.
Everyone was oat bran was the thing, and Postum coffee supplement substitute was oat bran based, right? My dad was big into the Postum.
I remember Cheerios put contains oat bran on the box, and that was a really big deal. And like, I mean,
and my reaction to the gluten-free thing is that while I believe that the statistic, which is let's generously say 1% of the population suffers from a bona fide case of celiac disorder or a sensitivity to gluten that can be diagnosed, it's a symptom of a country's psychological process when we are giving ourselves a disease so that we can limit our intake of something and thus have some discipline in our life.
I think that most people who make that choice do it in the same way I do my fake veganism. Mm-hmm. You feel better if you don't eat glutens. I mean,
you're saying glutens plural.
Glutens.
It's gluten.
I don't know.
It's like fishes.
Well,
fishes.
Thinking that like there are different glutens from different plants. You know, like there's...
Gluten is gluten. Gluten's a protein.
Okay. If you say so.
Don't quote me. I'd check it on the internet, but I was banned from the computer during
the
break.
You're the boss. Glutens is a funnier sounding word. Anyway, so I think people do that for the sake of trying to make a healthy choice. I mean, I definitely know people that have celiac disease and live that lifestyle because of the health ramifications. I'm not bringing it on anybody. Like, as our listeners know, I have weird food things that I do as well. I think it's interesting the crossover between gluten-free and carbophobia and how those two things overlap.
Do you think it was easy in the marketing, you know, on Fifth Avenue when they were like, carbs are getting, this whole carb thing's getting a little tired. How do we revamp the fear of carbs?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with Fifth Avenue. I think Fifth Avenue is late to the game on that.
Okay.
And I don't...
Madison Avenue?
It's Madison Avenue.
Okay, whatever. I don't watch Mad Men. Oh, but Mad Men, because Madison Avenue. See?
You were breaking new ground with me today.
I ate a medium rare cheeseburger, so I'm also feeling very punchy with gluten and beef and American cheese on it.
Yeah, I don't think the fix is in terms of advertising. I think they follow suit. I think it starts in health food stores. I think that's ground zero for these things. And once the groundswell comes from the Park Slope Food Co-op or, you know, all those stores, that's where it goes to broader audience, and then Madison Avenue or whoever jumps in thereafter.
You think that there's a link between Who Shops at the Park Slope Food Co-op, of which I was a member for exactly, I think, 3 weeks?
No, you're taking me literally. I'm saying that stores of that ilk,
yeah,
okay, that cater to people with specific dietary needs, they're the sharp, pointy tip of the wedge.
Okay.
And then as it gets wider and people become more concerned in a broader sense, that's when the money comes in. There was an article in the Times, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, about how Glutino, they make biscuits and cookies that are gluten-free, just was bought for some silly amount of money. Good for them. Not silly to them. Just silly to me.
Yeah. More power to them.
Yeah. They were, and that's a huge growth market. And, you know, and I know lots of, certainly know tons of chefs that take it very, very seriously, and spending a lot of time in restaurants as I do, you know, it's a real thing, whether the people are doing it for a dietary choice or because it's hazardous to their health. The problem with the restaurant thing is that people claim that they'll die if they eat gluten.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, they make sure that they don't get anything if they, in, you know, they kind of overshoot it to make sure they don't get it.
Like, and it's not...
I'm deathly allergic to garlic. No, that's not. No, you're not.
Right.
You're
it's not. And the gluten isn't an anaphylaxis reaction. You're not going to stop breathing. Your heart's not going to stop beating. It's a digestive level, which nobody wants, and is very painful. And I get it. And ChefEmily@sharpandhot.com, and you can send me all of your gluten stories. But even my closest friends know that I raise my eyebrow at the motivation behind it. And if it makes you feel better, I am a social libertarian. Go forth and be happy. But why is my oatmeal $7 now?
Well, you don't have to buy that oatmeal.
I know, it was mis—
the only thing that gets shelved. Me is that, you know, our ancestry, glutens were really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Your grandmother made pasta and you ate pasta and it sustained your family, and bread sustained your family. So there's a little bit of like turning your back on your heritage. But I mean, that's totally meaningless. That's just me being a sentimental DB.
I don't think so. And that, but this brings us right into our listener question from Zoe Maya about a particular ancient grain. I'm going to play it, and then we'll talk about the heritage nature of it.
Hey, Chef Emily. This is Zoe Maya calling from Cancun, Mexico. I'm wondering, farro and wheat berries, they seem like the same thing, they look like the same thing, but one is much more expensive than the other. Can you tell me the difference between farro and wheat berries? Thank you so much.
So farro and wheat berries, basically the same thing. Farro, a wheat berry is the kernel of wheat. If you think of it's a rhizome, so like a strand of wheat has the spiky top. At the end of each of those spikes, there's a little berry, and that's what wheat berries are. Farro is an Italian variety, or it's the Italian name for a wheat berry. Farro comes from the word farina. It's a very generalized term. And so there's a lot of misinformation as to like what exactly is farro and what exactly is a wheat berry. But they're delicious. They're super versatile. You cook them in 3 parts liquid to 1 part grains, and then you can use them in soups. You can use them in salads. I love them with olive oil and like cranberries and sliced almonds, and they're very healthy, and they are a whole grain. And I wonder, to just take this back to our gluten conversation, is it that we are stripping everything away from this grain in order to make it cheap and refined, and people will eat a lot of it as a processed enriched wheat flour? Whereas if you were eating the whole grain over the course of your dietary life, it comes with all of the stuff that helps you.
Well,
and it helps you digest the gluten that you've taken out. The stuff that, whatever your sensitivity to gluten is being made up for in the grain itself. But we've stripped those things away, and now all you're getting basically is gluten in a slice of white bread.
Just a slice of gluten for you.
Just a slice of gluten, which I happen to love.
I have no idea. I love farro.
I love farro. So, yeah. So, the difference between farro and wheat berries is about $10 a pound is sort of the short answer.
But there's no regulations on what you label it as.
No, in Italy, it's labeled by size. So, uh-huh. There's little tiny farro, and then there's big farro, and everybody in the middle. Wheat berries, there's no delineation. And then there's hard winter wheat berries and soft winter wheat berries. And that just comes from the different varieties of grain that they're harvesting the wheat berries themselves from.
Hmm.
If you have questions, listeners.
I have so many questions.
You weren't talking to me. No, but if you do, I mean, we're almost out of time. But 862-242-8599, or you can tweet me at Chef Emily P. If Twitter comes back up again, I will be able to receive your tweet. You can find us on Facebook.com/sharpandhot. This weekend, I'm going to Ohio to hang out with Team USA at their fundraising dinner for the Boku's Door, and I'll be bringing back an audio goodie bag to play for our listeners. And I have a question for the listeners out there. I have sort of a bet with a friend of mine. Without Googling it, just out of curiosity, I'm wondering if Boku's Door means anything to you as a listener. Call me.
Like they're aware of what it is?
Yes, you know what it is. Or you're like, nope, never heard of it.
Yeah.
At Chef Emily P on Twitter.
I think if they're listening to this show, they know what Boku's Door is.
I think we're going to be surprised.
Really?
I think we're going to be surprised. So yeah, help Matt and I answer that question. Additionally, next week, or maybe the week after, but I'm pretty sure next week, I'm going to have on Ron Keene, University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist, and he writes the Answer Guy column in my favorite magazine, Backyard Poultry. And he's going to come on the show and answer all of our chicken biology questions, and these are some of the questions that I've gotten so far. Why are some eggs brown and some eggs white? That is a totally reasonable question. All of these have come from genuinely curious adults. This next one was at a cocktail party. More than one cocktail had been drank, but do chickens fart? And also, do chickens get their periods? So we have someone who's going to come on the show and explain to us the mystery of chickens. My husband, a very smart man, thought that the hens laid an egg and then the rooster jumped into the nest at some other point and did like a fertilization dance over the eggs, and that's how the eggs became fertilized. We will find out from Ron Keene whether or not that is the case. If you have chicken questions, don't be shy at Chef Emily P or 862-242-8599. And don't forget to set your DVR. Sunday, March 30th, 10 p.m. Yours truly will be competing on the Food Network's Cutthroat Kitchen. Very cool. Excited. Until next week, thank you to Le Creuset, and keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.